Ways and Means Committee. It's June 16th. It's time to get out of here. It's 8:30 in the morning. And sorry I'm late, but I got tied up at the president's office, and when he wants to vent, he vents, and we have to get out when we can get out. So that's the way it went. We're going to start with Senate Bill 307. I'm going to open a public hearing on 307 and ask Senator Johnson to come up and explain this bill to us.
Okay. Mr. Kocher, while she's coming up, so in OLIS today, there is a packet for this bill. There's also supposed to be a work session, and there's a dash A7 amendment that's out there for you to look at, and there's also some information in the packet about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16. The genesis of this bill was time that I spent in an assisted living rehab section of a continuing care retirement community, as well as with conversations with a couple of residents in the independent living section of the same continuing care retirement community. What I experienced and observed gave rise to an originally much more aggressive draft than the one that you have before you today. Today's Senate Bill 307 has been greatly changed and is agreed upon by all of the affected parties, ergo my colleague Mr. Rose joining me on behalf of Leading Age, Phil Bentley on behalf of the Oregon Healthcare Association, the Ombudsman's Office. They would be here today, however, they're doing interviews, and Mrs. Mark Hatfield, who testified in support of the bill. The problem statement is that residents in continuing care communities need assistance with a number of the acts of daily living, including some of the most intimate. Stop.
Well, I know what you're going to say. I don't want to hear it.
All right, we'll leave it there.
Let's say it's intimate and significant, okay?
It's crucial that caregivers be sensitive for modesty, comfort levels, okay, boundaries, and preferences of their patients. And that's what this bill does. It requires facilities to respect residents' requests for assistance from qualified persons of the same gender and provides a process for written responses and documentation concerning such requests. It ultimately, in its amended form, expands the duties of the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, an agency that I think the legislature holds in high regard. They'll advocate for residents in the independent living sections of continuing care retirement communities, and that's the bill. I hope you consider it favorably.
Thank you for your testimony. Ozzie, you want to identify yourself for the committee and speak to us?
For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I represent Leading Age Oregon, and I'm assistant to the senator. I agree with everything she says. Thank you for the time.
Excellent testimony.
That's the
only thing I'd say to Senator Johnson was she's told me privately what went on, and I didn't want that in public record. Good bill should pass. But
Mr. Chair, would you like a motion?
I certainly would.
Procedurally, we need to close the public hearing and open a work session.
Close the public hearing, open a work session.
And we need to have your other senator in here. She's coming just a second.
While she's coming, could we ask Ms. Byerly to tell us about the A7?
Mr. Co-Chair. So the A7 just changes the language in the bill around the grievance process that the CCRCs, the continuing care communities, have to put in place to deal to work with some of their residents. It's a language change to that. Just real briefly, the fiscal impact on this bill is indeterminate for long-term care ombudsman. It will give them a new group of residents to serve. We're going to have them monitor that workload, and they can come back and talk to us about how that is turning out to be. And we're also going to work with them probably later this session to provide some additional short-term resources to help them bring on this new program, as well as deal with some other workload issues they have before them right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that, you know, we don't often hear from this sector, and they couldn't have a better spokesperson than Senator Johnson. And I think that a lot of people you won't even hear from are appreciating this action. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
I move the dash A7 amendment to Senate Bill 307.
And we have a motion to move the dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 307. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved.
Can we do another motion now, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
I move Senate Bill 307 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended.
We have a motion to move Senate Bill 307 to the Joint Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved.
Thank you,
and we'll
Mr.
need
Chair.
A carrier in full and a carrier on the floor of the Senate. I'm going to guess who that's going to be. Thank you, Senator Johnson.
Thank you
Johnson.
For the courtesy.
And on the House.
Who would like it?
You're curious.
Hmm? Would you like it in the House?
Sure, I could do that.
Representative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
I'm going to go right down the line now. Okay. Sounds good. We're open a work session on Senate Bill 608 relating to palliative care. Kim, is this yours?
Yes, the next will be mine.
Okay, so how about you walk us through the bill?
Okay. Chair Bates, members of the committee, Senate Bill 608 establishes a 9-member palliative care and quality of life interdisciplinary advisory council in the Oregon Health Authority to advise the director on establishing, maintaining, and operating and evaluating palliative care initiatives in Oregon. OHA is required to publish on its website information and resources about palliative care, and you should have a packet on OLIS, and there's the original staff measure summary, the fiscal impact statement are attached to this memo. OHA anticipates a need for about a quarter of an FTE to support this new council and program, and LFO believes that this is minimal for OHA, and any budgetary actions required for the bill will be addressed in their rebalance.
Thank you, Kim.
Would you like a motion?
We are in a work session.
I move Senate Bill 608 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
We have a motion to move Senate Bill 608 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so moved.
My bill.
Is your bill? Then would you be kind enough to carry it in full and on the floor, please?
I'd be honored.
Thank you
very much.
And then I'm going to open a work session.
Do we need one for the House?
Sorry.
Who would like to do?
I forget.
Representative
about
Kenny Geyer wants to do it.
I'm happy to do it.
Olson is now a volunteer control on both sides.
Yeah, Andy's getting all the rest.
Representative Kenny Geyer is going
to
take it?
Yes, I'd love to. Thank you.
Opening a work session on Senate Bill 698 relating to school nursing.
I'm Chair Bates, members of the committee. Senate Bill 698 creates a position of a state school nursing consultant in the Oregon Health Authority. And it also establishes a 14-member task force on school nursing, charged with examining and recommending sustainable funding sources for the school health services. And you should have all the paperwork on OLIS, and there is a -A6 amendment, and all the -A6 amendment does is appropriate $216,365 general fund to the Oregon Health Authority to establish this position.
And that's for the biennium?
Yes, that's for the biennium.
Mr. Chair? I move the -A6 amendment into Senate Bill 698.
We have a motion to move the -A6 amendments to the bill. Any discussion? Any objections? So moved.
Another motion, please?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 698 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
We have a motion to move Senate Bill 698 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Any objections? So moved. We need carriers in full.
I'll be happy to take it.
Thank you. And on the Senate floor, I expect it's going to be Senator Mons Anderson, probably. I think this is something she's interested in. And the House?
Me.
Yep. Good. So I'll close the work session 698 and we'll open a work session of House Bill 2230 related to communication between state agencies regarding members of uniformed services.
Chair Bates, members of the committee, House Bill 2230 requires the Oregon Health Authority to notify the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs at least once a month with the names and addresses of uniformed service members and veterans. OHA must obtain this release form from the veterans, and you should have the paperwork on OLIS. There is no amendment, and the fiscal impact, LFO anticipate that OHA and OEB and PEB may incur a cost associated with their system changes, but we anticipate that these costs are absorbable, and if there's any budgetary actions required, the bill can be addressed during the 2015-17 rebalance.
Pulling it up on OLIS, I'll read over your shoulder. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2230 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
We have a motion to move House Bill 2230 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? first bill I have to comment on here. This is actually going to allow veterans to have a better chance to get the benefits they deserve from the VA. So I was coordinating things inside OHA with VA. I think it's a good move, and it also may save us some state money when veterans pick up benefits they really deserve from Veterans Administration they're actually receiving from the state. So good bill. Appreciate it. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. And we will need carriers in, you want to carry it in Fullen in the House?
Yes, please.
And I'm going to give this to Senator Boquist on the floor, I think.
Good
He's
idea.
Very involved in veterans, and if he has a problem with it later, we'll talk to him about it. We'll give it to Boquist. Senator Boquist on the floor of the Senate, okay? So we'll close the work session on 2230 and open up a work session on House Bill. This gives me dyslexia, 3230, not 2230, 3230, relating to registered residential facilities. Good morning, Linda.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 3230 requires registration of community-based structured housing, defined as congregate housing, excludes residential care or treatment, where services and supports are provided to assist residents who have mental, emotional, behavioral, or substance abuse disorders. The bill would authorize the Oregon Health Authority to establish licensing standards and review processes for those facilities. The agency estimated that they'd need a full-time person to oversee the registration and inspection for these facilities. However, LFO is recommending only half a position, considering that in the budget that we expect to pass for that program, they will have four new positions to do similar work, and that they could manage the overall workload with four and a half rather than five positions. Although I will note there's considerable uncertainty as to the numbers of those facilities, and if workload is much different than anticipated, the agency may need to come back. The proposed -A2 amendment adds that general fund appropriation of $106,320. That's
it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the -A2 amendment and move House Bill 3230-A as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
We have a motion to adopt the A2 amendment and move House Bill 3230-A as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Linda, I want to get a little clarification. We're going to pass it, but I have very little memory of the June 3rd time we apparently discussed this here quickly. Are these essentially new facilities we're looking forward to moving, getting going? Are they there already? We have a lot of residential foster homes for people who have DD and mental health issues. Are they unregistered? And I know we're looking at them quite regularly. What group of homes is this?
Mr. Chair, it's not a new kind of facility. They're definitely out there, and the current statutes are very specific for which kinds of facilities are licensed, and it does exclude a number of facilities that do provide this structured housing. And by not being licensed, they're also not subject to any sort of safety inspections.
So somehow we develop this housing without licensing and not being inspected.
Right.
There's
someone here from the agency.
That's okay. I don't want to take a lot of time up. I just want some clarification.
Well, I was just going to say Representative Gallegos is here and is willing to answer questions if you have any.
And we also have a statement from the agency.
I'm not objecting. I just want a little clarification. How did this happen that we got our situation? We have unregistered homes for these very vulnerable people.
That's correct. DHS has authorities for licensing and oversight, but Oregon Health Authority does not.
Good.
In this situation.
I think it's appropriate we're doing this. Any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. And so we need carriers.
I can take it in full.
Take it in full.
And Representative Gallegos.
Take it in house. Senate, can you take it?
Sure, I'd be happy to. No, I'd be happy to. Yeah. Thank you. Unless there's a Senate sponsor.
I thought I saw. There's not.
Okay. There's not? Sure. Be honored.
Thank you.
Okay. So we'll close the work session on 3230 and open a work session on 741.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, last week you heard testimony on Senate Bill 741, which modifies some of the process the Department of Human Services uses when it's identifying potential adoptive parents. What the bill does is it requires DHS to hold current caretakers, who are usually foster parents that have had a child for more than 12 months, and relatives in equal consideration with when considering them as adoptive parents. The fiscal impact on the bill is indeterminate. It may increase some workload and related to some court action. It may also alleviate other issues that would have come up otherwise if the law hadn't been changed. So, I mean, it's going to it'll be a mix. We'll have the agencies monitor workload and come back and report if there's any significant workload that can't be managed.
Ready for a motion?
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 741 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
It's been moved that we move Senate Bill 741 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with due pass recommendations. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Sometimes it's best not to speak.
Well, I'm going to speak, and I'm going to thank Representative Stark very much for bringing this really important bill, and I think it helps put the pendulum back in the middle where it belongs. And if there's not already a Senate co-chief sponsor on this, I'd be honored to do that with you. If you have one, that's great.
Shields.
Terrific. Yeah. Shields can take it. That's great.
I would ditto this. I read the original law again last week, and I don't know why it's the pendulum swung so far in the wrong direction reading the original language. I don't understand why the courts and DHS have pushed so far the other direction. But this gives them clear direction that it's an equal playing field here. And what's important is what's best for the children, what we sometimes seem to lose sight of. So thank you for bringing this up. And thank you for your comments. Okay. So any objection? Seeing none, so moved. I'm going to ask if you're not on full, are you?
Well, me. Thank you so much.
I'm going to ask you, is it okay if Senate carries it in full or somebody in the House won't carry it in full? Why don't you take it?
Wants it. That's fine.
Either way. I'm happy to do it.
Sure. Want to take it in full?
That's fine.
Shields and Senator Shields will take it on the Senate floor and on the House floor. I'll make a wild guess here. Anybody?
Well, I wrote your name down. So.
Yeah.
Suppose I could carry this one.
I don't know. You know, it's a tough carry. I'm not sure that a freshman like that can handle it or not. What do you guys think? Do you think it's possible we can allow him to do this? And
take a
will
risk.
He get any Republican votes besides his own? I mean,
take a risk.
Even Olson. So how about we assign it to Representative Stark?
Okay.
That'll be good. Okay, good bill. Thank you. So I'm going to close the work session 741 and open a public hearing on 695. Linda, you want to lead this through a complicated bill?
Your bill?
It's got my name on it.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Senate Bill 695 repeals the sunset of statutes that authorize the Oregon Health Authority to contract with prepaid managed care health services organizations that provide care to medical assistance recipients. As it stands, the bill appropriates $150,000 general fund for a study relating to dental care.
And I'll add a few comments. So this is a consensus bill that's been worked on for probably somewhere near a year, trying to put together the changing relationships between CCOs and DCOs and maintaining systems that will help Oregonians get good dental care in the Medicaid programs. The world has changed in the last year and a half, 2 years since we stood up CCOs, and the original friction and relationships between CCOs and DCOs has really been resolved for the most part. Geographically, they don't line up as well as we'd like, and that may change in the future. But for the time being, we need this bill to keep things working the way they are. And there's some other groups that we need to be able to manage outside of these CCOs that this bill takes care of, too, in mental health and in some very sensitive areas of very fragile children. So this is an important bill. It's a consensus bill. The only question in my mind, I want to hear what people have to say about today, is whether we should take out the study or keep the study in. The study was put in initially because we thought we might need it, and that ended up bringing it down to us. And the question still remains in my mind whether that study is worthwhile or not, and I'm getting more and more feedback from the DCOs. They think the study should potentially stay in. and have a good look at this over the next year and a half, and then report back and see if we need to do something further with this whole system that we have built up with DCOs. So I'd like to call up two people who have signed up for this. Dr. Terry, you must be a doctor because I can't read your last name, but I know who you are.
Barrichello.
And Deborah Loy. Please identify yourselves for the committee.
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Dr. Terry Barrichello, and I am a Vice President and Chief Dental Officer of Moda Health. And I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 695. I've spoken with all the other DCOs, and there is consensus that the sunset should be repealed. And many of the other DCO leaders are here this morning and are available to testify or to answer questions if necessary. Here's why I believe the oral health of many Medicaid patients will be better served if the DCOs are allowed to continue. First, there are approximately 50,000 OHP members who receive their dental care from DCOs who contract directly with the state and not through CCOs. ODS Community Health, MOTA's DCO, has just over 8,000 such members. These are Oregonians who are statutorily exempt from having to join a CCO for one of the following reasons. They are American Indians or Alaska Natives. They are medically fragile. They are dual Medicare members, or they have primary commercial insurance. Second, the geographic alignment between CCOs and DCOs makes it more difficult to meet the oral health needs of some rural Medicaid patients. Progress is being made to overcome geographic disparities, but more work and time is needed. Lastly, we have a very positive relationship with the 13 CCOs with whom we contract. MOTA will not allow the removal of the sunset to impact the continuation of the integration and coordination with our CCO partners. We believe in the integration of oral health with community health and in the community coordination that many CCOs are providing. In fact, we are an owner and administrator of a CCO, the EOCCO, Eastern Oregon. But we also believe that the premature removal of DCOs will make it more difficult to meet the oral health needs of many poor Oregonians. As important as Senate Bill 695 is for what it does, it's equally important for what it does not do. My colleague, Deborah Loy, the Executive Director of Government Programs for Capital Dental Care, previously testified before the Senate Committee on Healthcare, and I'm going to quote her directly from that testimony. It, Senate Bill 695, does not change existing CCO and DCO contracting agreements. It does not change future CCO or DCO contracting agreements. It does not change the majority of the OHP enrollees in a CCO who receive their dental services through a CCO. It does not create exceptions to CCO enrollment that is not already allowed in statute. It does not change anything a CCO can do as a direct contractor with the state in delivering OHP dental services. In conclusion, I'd like to thank Senator Bates for working with the DCOs to achieve consensus on this bill. I'd also like to thank the Senator and all of the committee for advocating for increased Medicaid funding for oral health and to increase the dental options that we can provide to those most in need. It is right and it is just. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I hope you all can support Senate Bill 695.
For the record, my name is Deborah Loy. I'm the Executive Director of Government Programs, and thank you both co-chairs and committee members for the opportunity to testify. I won't reiterate what Dr. Barrichello has said that I agree with, but a couple of things that this bill does policy-wise were some unintended consequences, I think, of 3650 and 1580, which was the transformation legislation. It allows an organization like my own, which is not a commercial insurance carrier, to operate and do a lot of the same things that a commercial insurance carrier would do, but not be required to have an insurance certificate as either a direct contractor to the state for this open car or these people that don't have to choose a CCO but have elected to be in a dental plan. And it also allows me as a subcontractor to a CCO to not require that. So those policy things that are built into the bill are very important to our organization. But I'd also like to provide some comment to the study. I think coming into the CCOs a little bit after the fact, which dental had a little bit of time before we had to contract and integrate, a study such as that that's been proposed could provide some valuable insight to continuing the work that's being done integrating dental. So I think it could bring value, Senator. I think that the Bill 695 is important enough in and of itself without the study, but I think the study could definitely bring some value.
Thank you. Questions?
This is more of a comment, but I'm hoping that you can hear it, but I also want to thank you, Senator Bates, for bringing this forward. Another population that is not currently directly assigned to the DCO, but we would like the opportunity to explore it, and of course we can only do that if this goes forward, is the prenatal dental care for the fee-for-service population, which is the expanded population as well as the Calum population. And one of the challenges, right now the rate of those women getting any kind of dental service at all, even just a screening, is between 19 and 25%. It's really abysmal, and we know what the effect is when women continue to have dental caries and pass that on to their children. One of the things that OHA is exploring is perhaps assigning them to a DCO when they sign up for fee-for-service, and that can only happen if the sunset is lifted. So I'm really delighted to see this. I think we need all options on the table at this point. So thank you.
Any other questions? A comment, a question for me just real quickly. Thank you both for your testimony. Dr. Barrichello, thank you for coming in today. I know you're very busy, and you also. I do have a question that has nothing or very limited amount to do with this bill. It might be, and if we do the study, it might be something we'd be looking at in that study. And we've been debating dental sealant programs, and we've had a really difficult time wrapping our arms around this. We have information indicate that in the first grade or in our kindergarten and in the fifth grade or so, that a lot of the dental plans are out there in the schools already doing sealants. We've been told they have to be done very carefully and properly, or they don't have value. But if they're done properly, they have great value. The next best thing, the fluoridating the water. So, Doctor, would you give me your opinion on this? Because it's going to help us make a decision on something in the next day or two, and that is some other dental bills. And I've got you here in front of me, so I got a shot at you, and I'm going to take it, okay?
Co-Chair Bates, my pleasure. I practiced dentistry for 13 years in private practice and participated in community sealant events, and I saw the wide variety of quality. A lot of it has to do with the situation doing on in-school clinical treatment can be challenging. But through a certification program, through the types of quality measures they're trying to institute, I think that we can really calibrate and assure quality sealants are being provided. It is problematic to a private practitioner when sealants are done in a community setting but not necessarily community communicated back. That information isn't given back to their primary dentist when there is a primary dentist, and it can lead to redundancy. So some of the aims in the sealant program are to reduce the redundancies and ensure quality, so I support that.
Deborah?
I would agree wholeheartedly.
Okay, so if we had a choice between various programs, sealants would be our first choice if we had to make that choice.
Sealants have the opportunity to impact a child early on and have a very long-lasting preventive result. So I agree.
Dr. Shercliffe, would you like to step up here for a minute?
Stepping into this, Dr. Mike Shercliffe, Advantage Dental, members of the committee, chair. Stepping into sealants in the dental world is wrought with many terrors. But the CDC is thinks it's one, it believes, and we do too, that it's an important feature. Unfortunately, there's a lot of controversy on how to do it. The biggest problem we have in Oregon is the fact that we don't have any way to get all the data on all the sealants. I mean, a lot of various people are doing it, and is nothing worse than to schedule somebody into your office to do sealants and feel like they've already been done. It's a really waste of resources. I don't want to get into the debate about whether it's the most important program, because very frankly, it'd be nice if we had kids that didn't have any disease when they got to the time when they got their teeth that need to be sealed. But when it comes to those children to prevent disease at that age. It's very, very effective, and what we were all clamoring for is some more consistency in how we report the data so that we don't waste resources.
Yeah, thank you very much. I know this is taking up committee time, but I really wanted to know because it's going to help us in further decisions, right?
Yes.
So thank you. Thank you for your time, all of you. Thank you very much. So this was just a public hearing, not a work session. I'm going to check with the co-chairs on the cost of the study and see if they're okay with it or not. And if they are, I would suggest we not take the study out. We go ahead and run the study and get more information. But I need to check the co-chairs first. So you'll see this bill back either with or without the study. And if the study's in it, we won't change the bill. If the study's in it, if you pulled out, we have to do an amendment to pull it out. That's why we came to the work session today. So any other issues before the committee? Could you give us a rundown of the rest of the week real quickly, Linda? As far as you know it at the moment.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, we are hoping to finish the budget of OHA tomorrow, but I do not yet have all approvals. So it's still, that's why you don't have the materials out there yet. I'm seeing how quick you are, and I keep adding bills to the agenda for tomorrow. So I think there were a lot of emails last night, and I'm still trying to be sure which bills have actually been approved by all parties. So we may have a number of work sessions on bills tomorrow. And then we're hoping to start the DHS budget on Thursday, along with a number of bills that relate to those programs.
And I should warn the committee that, as you already know, sunny day is imminent. And it is likely that we'll be closing down in the middle of next week, is my expectation, looking at the bills and things we have to work, we have to get done. I don't think it'll be before then, but it might stretch a bit, but I'm thinking probably in the middle of next week. So be thinking that way, prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Then we are adjourned. Did I close the public hearing?
Not yet.
I closed the public hearing on 695, and we are adjourned.